less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Is my creation. Life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let's go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, all around the country, and yes, via the World Wide Web, all around the world. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. We hope to have a great show for you. Of course, you can join the program by calling us at 866-546-5254. And let me tell you right now, I hope some of you Hillary bashers do call the program today. I would specifically like to talk to you today. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Expecting some very inclement weather here shortly. It has started to rain here in Southwest Florida. We're in the Naples-Fort Myers area, and it's about 77, 78 degrees today, but windy. We're going to get some high winds and nasty storms coming up in a while, so be ready. If you hear the studio blow away, you'll know what happened. We do get some nasty weather now and then, but not too often. Been a couple of years since we had a hurricane, after all. Of course, we're not in hurricane season right now anyway. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you along with us. I know you're all tired today. I know you all stayed up late and watched the Grammys last night. It's a really important business, these Grammys and the Oscars and the Golden Globe and the whatever the names of these other Tonys. I can't think of the names of the rest of them. Aren't they something? Maybe you're a fan of these. I am not, as you know, if you listen to me very often. Here we have another wonderful evening of filthy rich stars. Egotistical, filthy rich stars gathering to get more free publicity and pat themselves on the back so that they can make even more money off the poor suckers that think they're something special. That's how I see those shows. Oh, my God, I hate them. I hate them. I hate them. Oh, well, there. I've said it. Do you get the point? I hate them. I just don't like that community. I mean, I love good music as much as the next person. I love a good movie as much as the next person, although I'm not a real movie buff. Once in a while I see a really great movie, about once every 5 years. That's about it. But not overly impressed with the Hollywood community, as you've heard me say many, many times. Today is Darwin's birthday, by golly. Yes, it is. It's Darwin's birthday. And, oh, by the way, there's another guy by the name of Abe Lincoln. It's his birthday today. He was born in, what was it, Hardin County, Kentucky, I believe. Yes. Hardin County, Kentucky. Abe Lincoln. Honest Abe. What do you think Abe Lincoln would think of this chorus of liars in Washington, D.C. today in his party? They like to claim Abe as a Republican. I doubt very much that if Abe Lincoln were alive today, if he would even consider joining the Republican Party. But that's another story for another day. And of course, we have, what do you want to call it? I've heard it called the Potomac primary today, the Chesapeake primary today, yada, yada, yada. Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia all will go to Obama easily. No surprises anywhere, although the news media will do their best to gin this up as a huge story that Obama wins big in Maryland and D.C. and Virginia, and the tide has turned and he's running away with it now. He's got that mojo going for him. They'll manufacture a huge story out of something that is really nothing today. Obama fully expects to win all three of those by a wide margin. The Clinton people expect to lose them by a wide margin, and there's no news for anybody in that. But you know how the news people are. They'll make it a big, big, big deal. Since I last spoke to you, I see that Junior Bush went down to Tennessee, and he told the storm-stricken people of Tennessee that the government is there to help them. Wonder if they'll help them out the same way they helped all those people in New Orleans. Really, the only time I've seen the Bush government willing to help anybody is if you owned oil. If you owned oil, they'll come to help you quite a bit. They'll do just about anything. They'll do your bidding. They'll do anything you want. They'll start a war for you if you own oil. Got any interest in oil? They'll lay it all on the line for you. And, of course, great news today. General Motors reported a $38.7 billion loss for 2007. That's a decent chunk of change to lose in 1 year, isn't it? $38 billion. But not to worry. Not to worry. They're offering buyouts to all their employees. They want to get rid of all their employees. All the folks that have dedicated their lives to working for General Motors for all these years. They say, here's a few bucks. Get the hell out the door. Don't let it hit you in the ass on the way out. We want to give you a cheap buyout here. We know you all need some money. We know we've taken away gradually, decreased your insurance benefits and your pension benefits and all that, and now we'd like to get rid of you altogether. So here, take these few shekels and get the hell out of our way so we can hire somebody at half the cost that we're paying you right now. That's the real story. That's the one between the lines. Get out, stay out. Don't want to see you anymore. Take the buyout. Chrysler's doing the same thing. Don't you love these American corporations that are so dedicated to the American worker that help put them where they are today? Don't you love the attitude of the giant corporations toward the American workers? As I've said before, it sometimes rankles me when I go by some of the... I don't go by them much anymore because God knows there are very few corporate headquarters here in Southwest Florida. But on the occasion that I am at different places around the country and drive by a corporate headquarters and see a big old American flag hanging out front, I think, why, you facetious bastards, you're shipping all your jobs overseas. Why don't you fly a Chinese flag out in front of your business? Why don't you tell it like it is? Fly the flag of Mexico. Fly the flag of the Philippines, Indonesia, China. Fly those flags out in front of your business. That's where you've got all your profit coming from now. That's where you've shipped all the American jobs to now. Oh, we had to. We had to stay competitive. Listen, raped and pillaged a consumer for how many years and passed out God knows how many hundreds of billions of dollars to stockholders. And when competition gets tough, you can't take it in the first place. You have to take it out on is your labor, on the working man, the first guy to suffer. Yeah. Don't get me started on that. I hadn't planned to talk about that today, really. I did see something very interesting. I'm jumping all over the place, but I did see something very interesting before the show started today. I had the tube on for a few minutes, and I see that Dan Abrams on MSNBC, and I would like to mention them in a few moments, and you know what I'm going to talk about. Dan Abrams was interviewing a college student from Wisconsin, 21 years old, never voted in a presidential election before, and he is a superdelegate to the Democratic Convention. That's right, 21 years old, never voted before, and he's a superdelegate to the Democratic National Convention. How the hell did that happen? Well, it happened because he ran some sort of a statewide campaign to get himself elected as a delegate, and he ends up as a superdelegate. Never voted before, 21 years old, college student. Are we in trouble or are we not? God, how did things like that happen? I have nothing against 21-year-old college students. He's a political activist. Fine. All well and good. I've been a political activist for a good many years myself. Not a delegate. I'm not a super delegate. Probably shouldn't be one. But to think that perhaps the nomination, the Democratic nomination for President of the United States is going to come from people like this, it just bothers me. And it bothers me that this could happen. It could come down to the superdelegates, and what kind of a lesson is that going to show everybody? Very poor one, I might add. I know one of the superdelegates. One of the superdelegates is a good friend of mine. I know all about the superdelegates. It's a story you really don't want to know a whole lot about, or you will quit politics forever. Yes, you will. Now, what I wanted to start the program off talking about today, I'm in a mood today, as you can probably tell by now. What I really wanted to start out talking about, I wrote down a few notes because I didn't want to forget anything. I'm a Democrat, a proud yellow dog liberal Democrat. That's what this show is about. I make no bones about it. I advertise it as such. I've always advertised it as such. I call a spade here. When I see something in the Democratic Party I don't like, I say it. I believe in the principles of the Democratic Party. I believe in many times we've gone astray in the last few years and not followed those principles. I believe we've been wimps the past few years. We've laid down and let the Republicans run over top of us. And I've got a lot of bones to pick with the party right now and have had for several years. But I am a Democrat. That's what this show is labeled to be, and those are the types of opinions that will be espoused on this program. I make no apology for that whatsoever. And if I offend anybody with what I'm about to say, well, that's too bad. I don't mean to. But I do mean to be honest and truthful with you at all times, and this is something that's really been bothering the hell out of me, and I do want to bring it up. And the point is, what is it about the Clintons? Somebody tell me what it is about the Clintons. I've got to get this off my chest. I have not chosen between Hillary and Barack as of yet, and I will. And in the meantime, there's something that's bothering me to the point that I want to scream every time it comes up. And my question is, and I've asked this question many times in the past few weeks, what did the Clintons do to so many Democrats that was so wrong? And I could easily sit here and say the same thing about Obama, okay? But today I'm talking about Hillary. What did the Clintons do? I mean, I know why the Republicans hate them. They hate anyone with a D behind their name. They hate anyone who threatened their power, interrupted their march to take complete and total control of the government of the United States like they have right now, and turn the whole thing over to corporate entities and the corporate establishment. But what did the Clintons do to so many of you, my listeners, to make you dislike them, even hate them so much? I want to know. And you Republicans too. I know some high-ranking Democrats in Washington who cringe when they hear the name Clinton. I went through this very recently once again. And when I ask them why they feel that way, they always have this, don't you know, look on their faces. But they can never adequately explain their hatred for all things Clinton. They just can't do it. I'm reading here in the past few days supposed Democratic, liberal, and dare I say the word that I dislike so much, progressive websites, where the Clintons are being reviled as some sort of villains by Democrats. The hatred from them, from the far left, is palpable, and it's disgusting to me. Damn, has anybody forgot the 8 years of peace and prosperity we enjoyed during the Clinton administration? Oh, an accident, you say. Oh, no, it wasn't an accident. And many of my listeners have sent me correspondence telling me all how they hate Hillary and Bill Clinton. Fine, you do that all you want, but if you do, don't tell me you're a Democrat, because most assuredly you are not. The point is, the Clintons aren't perfect. I don't agree with everything they've done. I never will. I don't know. I was damned embarrassed over that whole Monica Lewinsky thing. I don't know of a single politician I do agree with on every issue. And there are things I don't like about Obama or Hillary, but I'm not going to divide the party over a couple of issues, and I'm not going to open the door for the Republicans to take the White House and continue on with another 4 years of Junior Bush-type government. And if you're involved in this Hillary bashing, I urge you to reconsider. Not for the party, not for Hillary Clinton, but for our country. The point is, be intelligent enough to understand that no one candidate is going to share everything you believe in with you. It's not going to happen, not ever. We're all in this important primary race, and many are trying to paint the Clintons as Washington insiders, for God's sake. I hear that. I'm fascinated by that statement. Spare me. The Clintons emerged as a very minor political power from the state of Arkansas. Arkansas, for God's sake. We're not talking big, powerful political states like Ohio or Texas or Florida or California or one of those political powerhouses, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois. Arkansas. So right out of the gate, the Clintons were ostracized and they were criticized by the Washington establishment for being a bunch of Beverly Hillbilly like nothing boss hog politicians. And when it became apparent that's not all they were, well, the establishment on both sides of the aisle didn't like it one bit. And the attitude was in Washington, who are these country bumpkin hicks to come into our town and take over? Our town. Damn it, I hate going to that town. I love the place. I love the place. But there is an attitude in that town by politicians and pundits and people on K Street alike that this is our town. And we don't like people like Bill and Hillary Clinton coming to town and taking the power away from people who ought to have it, people who have shared the power for decades. We don't like it. It's our town. The people that have the big soirees night after night, the big get-togethers, the big cocktail parties, they hate the Clintons. They aren't part of the establishment. Well, the thing is, it didn't take them very long to figure out that these people were not the Beverly Hillbillies. They were no ordinary people, Bill and Hillary Clinton. They were charming. They're witty. Enormous intellectual capacity and political savvy, both of them. They were the real deal, but they came from Arkansas. And probably the biggest bone I have to pick right now, besides the people in our party who are constantly bashing one another, the Clinton people bombing bashing the Obama people are just as guilty. But today I'm talking about Hillary. I will talk about Barack another day. But the really big bone I have to pick with the most people is the press and the media. They went after him from day one. They went after him before day one, before he was inaugurated. Bill was not one of the Washington boys. And Hillary... who the hell did she think she was trying to take part in her husband's administration? A woman? How dare she? Perfectly all right for Nancy Reagan to consult what do they call those people? Psychics. About her husband's administration and tell Ronnie what to do according to the moon and the stars. That's okay. That's just a little eccentric. But who the hell is Hillary Clinton think she is trying to help out in her husband's administration just because she's got the intellectual capacity to do so? How dare she? The press attacked them from the time Bill Clinton secured the Democratic nomination in 1991, and they have not stopped to this day. They have been nonstop against the Clintons. The press simply transferred their incessant attacks on Bill over to Hillary without missing a beat. And I knew they would. You knew they would. Even those who are supposedly on the left. MSNBC has practically let the fight against the Clintons, they've led it. They've led it. They, in my opinion, have been worse than Fox. Because they at least have in the past said that they wanted to be fair. I mean, although Fox's motto is fair and balanced, we all know that Fox is a mouthpiece for the Republican Party. We know that. MSNBC has kind of led on that there's something else. That they're like the anti-Fox people. But lately, they've led the fight against the Clintons, what with the attacks and smears by Chris Matthews, that the only reason Hillary Clinton got to where she is today because her husband messed around. What a damn thing to say. I am sickened by the fact that Chris Matthews said a thing like that. And Tucker Carlson, oh, don't get me started. And Joe Scarborough. And David Schuster. With media friends like MSNBC, who needs enemies? Actually, I would say in the last few months, Hillary Clinton's got better treatment from Fox than she has from MSNBC. Dan Abrams probably being the only fair one in the bunch. It's been a nonstop attack on Hillary Clinton. David Schuster, I don't know how long he's been suspended for. I don't care. If I was the president of that network, I would have fired him for what he said, saying that they were pimping their daughter. I would have fired him for that. Not just for the ugliness of the statement, but for the stupidity. And Matthews would have been gone as well. It's unforgivable what David Schuster said. I can never look at him again and see an honest, ethical journalist as I used to. Never will I ever listen to anything he says in a serious way again. Never. I hope they fire him. If they do, you know damn well where he will end up. He will end up on Fox. Can't you see what's happening here? Everybody ought to be able to see, whether you're for Obama or whether you're for Hillary Clinton, can't you see what's happening with the media? It's a concerted attempt to kill her candidacy. Do remember that Sean Hannity, after the last presidential election, the very day after, started his Stop Hillary campaign. They're that afraid of her. And just last evening, in my local newspaper, there appeared the weekly column by the alt-right writer Thomas Sowell. I don't know where he ever got his start, but he's as bad as Michelle Malkin, only he's been around longer. And he disparaged the Clintons in every sentence of the piece. Told everyone they should be looking up Whitewater. Yes, told them to look up Whitewater and this and that scandal. The only thing Thomas Sowell forgot to mention in his column is that the Clintons were not found guilty of a single transgression in all of those investigations. And if you by any chance think the Clintons had even a decent chance of getting a fair shot from Special Prosecutor Ken Starr and the media during that whole affair, then you're not capable of having any kind of an intelligent thought in your head. Sidney Blumenthal, who's been a guest on this program a couple of times, wrote a book. He's a Clinton confidant and advisor during their years in the White House. He wrote a book about the Clinton years in the White House, and in it he told a story about a scarcely known, unreported outcome of the of the incessant investigations and media obsession with Whitewater. On December 13, 1995... I quote this out of his book, the Resolution Trust Corporation, created by the U.S. government to oversee the SNL meltdown, released its report on Whitewater. The result of an inquiry directed by the Republican Jan Stevens, a former U.S. attorney, and his law firm, Pillsbury, Madison, and Sutro. All fears from the White House turned out to be misplaced because the report completely and categorically absolved the Clintons and answered all outstanding questions about Whitewater. They were completely vindicated. And so they felt so good about it, they sent out copies of this report to more than 150 news organizations. And they waited to get their just dues in the media. Nothing happened. The Wall Street Journal ran a piece about it without comment, even though they'd led the charge in wanting to burn the Clintons at the stake. The New York Times and the Washington Post didn't mention it at all. Unless you count the fact that the Times mentioned it almost 2 weeks later in the Sunday News of the Week in Review section. And don't you love the way the right tries to equal it all out by talking about how badly the left has treated poor Junior Bush? Like he's even earned a mention next to the Clinton for his accomplishments. I guess my point of this whole thing is, I don't understand. I do. But I don't want to accept what I understand. I've been through this so many times in these past months and years. And it's probably the reason, as I spoke to somebody today, but it's probably the reason, and I'll be honest here, it's probably the reason I didn't want Hillary Clinton to run for the presidency. I didn't want her to. And it's on a selfish note. Because I didn't want to have to listen to 4 or 8 years of the amazing crap that's going to come from the right-wing media and the Republicans the entire time she's in the office, if she makes it that far. I didn't want to hear it. She's got thick skin. She can take it. I can't. And I wouldn't be able to take it about Obama either without squealing real loud. And as you know, I'm capable of doing that. But I know people, and as I mentioned a moment ago, for these past years and months, that hate the Clintons, hate them, and can't explain why. And I have an answer as to why they hate the Clintons, and they don't like to accept it. The answer is because they've been brainwashed by the right-wing media. That's right. The right-wing talk radio and TV pundits and newspapers, newspaper columnists have been so successful at brainwashing that they've actually reached across the aisle and whacked many Democrats with their vile hatred of the Clintons. That's exactly what's happened. They don't like the Clintons because they aren't supposed to like the Clintons. And let me say once again, I do not agree with everything the Clintons have stood for politically. I certainly do not, but I don't know anybody who I've agreed with a whole lot more that's been elected to that office. There are people who I've agreed with more than I agree with the Clintons in political life, but they have not reached the Oval Office. And let's be practical, they will not. But I've asked one person after another. You know, I'll talk about the election. I'll talk about Obama. I'll talk about Clinton. And the moment you mention Hillary Clinton's name, oh, Hillary Clinton, oh my God, oh no, oh no. Not Hillary Clinton. And my reaction is always, why? Why not Hillary Clinton? What has she done? What has she done that you hate so much? Now, you and I both know, most of my listeners anyway, you're astute in political matters, and you know that many of us have held it against her that she voted to allow Bush to go to war. Okay. Okay. That's a valid observation. That's a valid reason not to like Hillary Clinton. I will accept that. I don't like that either. Never have. She may have given a decent explanation, not good enough to suit me, not good enough to suit you, certainly, by saying she voted to give him authorization, should he find it necessary. She didn't think, well, I don't know if I believe that, but that's what she said. So, okay, that's a valid answer. But what else? Was it, well, the Whitewater thing? No. No, not the Whitewater thing. They've completely, as I said a moment ago, absolved of all of that. Well, I don't like the Clinton machine. Okay, what? Tell me, what is it? And somebody tell me today, well, you know, I'm tired of this Bush-Clinton thing. Well, it's been Bush-Clinton-Bush so far. Hasn't been another Clinton yet. But if she is qualified and earns it, that's one thing. To be unqualified, just plain, in my opinion, ignorant and stupid, like Junior Bush, that's quite another. In my opinion, Hillary Clinton is as intellectually qualified to be President of the United States as was her husband. Or anybody else that's held that office for a good long time. Certainly with at least double the IQ of the current occupant. And it goes for Obama as well. He has to have at least double the IQ of the current occupant of the occupants of the Oval Office. But a lot of people treat Clinton like he's some sort of a ultra-powerful Huey Long or something. He is not. And again, let me emphasize, I don't agree with everything Bill Clinton did. I don't agree with every policy that Hillary Clinton has gone along with. I don't. All I'm saying here is that we need to give both of our candidates a fair shake. We don't agree with either one of them all the way on all their policies. And they're both tremendous people. And if you take an attitude of my candidate or nothing, then you're hurting your own cause, because although they may have minor differences, they are both true Democrats and they both deserve your vote. I have issues that I disagree on with both of them. But either of them getting elected to the White House would be 1,000% better than having John McCain sitting there waiting for his moment to push the button and satisfy the insane wishes of the neocon right to further the imperialistic aims in the Middle East. And on a domestic note, both Hillary and Barack will nix the tax cuts for the rich. And they'll both do something about health care. You may not completely agree with either of their policies on health care, but either of them be better than what we have now. So I guess what I'm asking you here is, don't be all or nothing. Fight like hell for your candidate. But when the dust settles, throw down your arms and march on the winning side. That's all I'm saying. Maybe that sounds crazy to you, but I thought about it for a long time, and I'm just growing very, very weary of turning on the TV, and no matter what kind of a comment I hear, or who I hear it from, it's anti-Hillary Clinton, and I would feel the same way, I guarantee you, if it was anti-Barack Obama on every single word. And we're going to go to a break, but before I go to a break, let me play something for you. Just a short little montage of statements coming from Mr. McCain. And if this doesn't nail down for you exactly why, either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, either one, if it doesn't nail down for you that both of them are vastly superior and deserve your vote over what's running against them, then I don't know what would.
Anyone else, because it grieves me so much that we have not told the American people how tough and difficult this task would be. And it has contributed enormously to the frustration that Americans feel today, because they were led to believe that this would be some kind of a day at the beach. I believe that the success will be fairly easy.
Go back, Senator, to 2002, the administration saying we'd be greeted as liberators.
There's no doubt in my mind, once these people are gone, that we will be welcomed as liberators.
I believe that we can win an overwhelming victory in a very short period of time.
President Bush has talked about our sitting in Iraq for 50 years, maybe 100. We'll be fine with you.
We're not going to get into house-to-house fighting in Baghdad.
People to cause difficulties in house-to-house fighting. We've just seen that in southern Iraq. We have not told the American people how tough and difficult this task would be. They were led to believe that this would be some kind of a day at the beach.
Everybody comes to Rick's.
If he can stand it, I can. Play it.
Howdy, Rangers. Tune into Rick's Place. You'll be fascinated with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner's take on all of today's political issues from a real Texan's liberal point of view. So mosey on into Rick's Place for some good old hospitality with Rick Goodner. See you there, Rangers, this Saturday right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
And if you want another kind of love,
Rick's Place with Rick Goodner, part of the weekend lineup on The Horn, running all weekend in rotation with The Sowers Report and Night Sounds.
If you change your mind,
take a chance
on the church in line,
take a chance
on the unseen free, take a chance on me,
take a chance
if you need me, let it be known, gonna be around, if you got no place to go when you're feeling down, if you're all alone.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. Oh, I'm in a mood today. Had enough. Stand out and open up my window and yell outside, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And I'm not, without saying something, I'm going to say something. And let me make one thing straight to one emailer I got during that break. I will fight like hell to elect a Hillary Clinton as president of the United States. And I will fight like hell to get Barack Obama elected president of the United States. Don't accuse me of picking one over the other, not because I have not. I've said before, it will suit me just fine, and you may or may not agree. This is my opinion, based on my likes, my dislikes, and my research. If they make a ticket, it'll be unbeatable. We'll hold the White House for 16 years. I'm absolutely convinced of that, barring any freakish thing happening. Unless you think that there's a perfect Democrat out there that we could have elected, let me just mention that they'll all disappoint you sometime. Can't tell you how disappointed, and you've heard me mention it on this show not too long ago, how proud I was of Chris Dodd's action, getting up and saying that he would filibuster any attempt to get this immunity bill through. Did he? No. I love Chris Dodd. I've met Chris Dodd. I've spoken at length with Chris Dodd. I think he's a tremendous man. I don't know why he went back on his promise. I don't know. I'd love to know what the reason is. Perhaps we'll hear it. But there you go. There's a perfect example. There's a guy I had complete faith in, don't agree with on everything. But he promised to filibuster this FISA immunity thing. Didn't happen. Why? Wish I knew. And I wish I knew why. And somebody please tell me, how can it be that on this immunity bill, the Republicans went right down the line, every damned one of them, as far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they absolutely stuck together and voted together on this immunity bill. I don't believe there was one dissenter on the Republican side. And yet we had, 16, 17 Democrats join them? I haven't counted them up for sure. The usual suspects. And even a couple that I didn't expect to be there. Jay Rockefeller. Evan Bayh. That doesn't surprise me. Daniel Inouye. Tim Johnson from South Dakota, Herb Cole, another one that doesn't surprise me one bit, Mary Landrieu, Claire McCaskill, Mark Pryor, Blanche Lincoln, Dianne Feinstein, wish I could figure her out, Ken Salazar, Tom Carpenter, Barbara Mikulski, Jim Webb, shocked at that one, shocked that Jim Webb went for that, shocked. Ben Nelson, a little bit surprised at that. And, of course, our Republican, our DR from Florida, a guy who runs as a Democrat, who's actually, I don't know, I'm probably not being fair here, it seems to me, he votes with the Republicans more than he does the Democrats, is Bill Nelson. Kent Conrad and Debbie Stabenow. Debbie surprises me. How can it be that there are that many defectors from our side, and I'm saying our, my side, maybe mostly yours too, and yet all the Republicans absolutely stick together on the whole thing. Very disappointed that Chris Dodd didn't carry through with his threat, his promise to filibuster that. Oh, he got up and made a token speech, and it was good. But why? I've heard no explanations coming from anybody. I don't get it. I really don't. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join the program. You know, there is no doubt. A majority of the senators and a whole lot of them Democrats think that all the telecom companies shouldn't be accountable for cooperating with the administration's warrantless wiretapping program. Many believe illegal. And, of course, that word illegal, what does that mean anymore? What does it mean in this administration? I don't think illegal even means anything anymore. I don't know that there's anything that these people want to do that they consider illegal. It hasn't mattered to them whether anything was illegal or not on the books illegal. They've done it anyway. They've broken the law I don't know how many times, and when it comes down to the nitty-gritty, they just redefine the law. That's all. When you have an Alberto Gonzalez on your side, when you've got the Supreme Court on your side, you just do what you damn well please. Makes me wonder if we have a true democracy here anymore. It's been a whole hell of a lot more like a dictatorship in these past few years than what I remember this government as being. I don't remember any president having the cojones, and I'll give Bush credit for that. He's got them. Of just breaking the law over and over and over again. Now, while it's true that Ronald Reagan broke the law at will, Iran-Contra, it was in your face breaking the law. I'm not sure Ronnie Reagan even understood what the law was at that point, so can't hold him as accountable as I would somebody that's supposedly sane. And is mentioned on the chat room right now. Bob mentioned on the chat room. I forget who said it. Nixon said it. If the president does it, it's not illegal. Oh, boy. That would set you up for some good things, wouldn't it? If the president does it, it's not illegal. So, in other words, the president of the United States could step out on the White House lawn and get him a lawn chair out there and light up a big old Cheech and Chong stogie right in front of him. Blow down a couple of lines of coke. do anything he wants to, and it's just, well, I'm the president. I can do what I want to do. Some of them have done anything they wanted to do. But I don't recall anybody being as in-your-face with it as the Bush administration. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so. I just don't understand on this immunity deal, why they folded Harry Reid once again. Now, as I understand it, they can take this off the table. They can take this issue off the table. There are a lot more pressing issues to work on than this. And if Harry Reid has any guts, they just pull it. Pull it right now. But I think we all know where Harry Reid will go with it, right? Ah, yes. We did get some really great news this afternoon from the administration. And all of you who are having a tough time financially, having a hard time paying the bills, your expenses are up and your income is down or stayed static. And if you're having trouble making your house payment, why, relax. That's right. The Bush administration Tuesday announced an expanded plan for lenders to help homeowners by temporarily suspending foreclosures for people facing the imminent loss of a home. Now, that's good news, isn't it? I was just so happy when I read this. I have friends who are facing foreclosure, and so the plan called Project Lifeline, and isn't that a nice name? Project Lifeline. It will allow overdue homeowners to suspend foreclosures for 30 days while they try to work out more affordable terms with lenders. Well, isn't that nice? It involves major lenders who've agreed to widen their efforts to help borrowers. Project Lifeline, an extra 30 days. Wow. An extra 30 days that you can 30 days that you can hang on now to your home and stay a little longer before they take it from you. Why would they come up with something 30 days. But, you know, it's another one of those things where it shows some of that good old Republican compassion, you know, the compassionate conservatism that we're always talking about. Absolutely. 30 more days. Man, that's great. Going to take a quick break. Be right back.
Thank you. We're the Clark Brothers, and this is our Rod Stewart song, You're in My Heart.
Didn't know what day it was when you walked in to the room. I said hello unnoticed. You said goodbye too soon. You're in my heart, you're in my soul. You'll be my breath should I grow old. You are my lover, you're my best friend. You're in my soul.
That's real nice. Oh, taking a look at the market right now, it's up, what, 111 points for all you big investors? 111, it was up about 190. Oh, no, it was up about 217 points earlier today. So a little bit of selling off going on down here around closing time. Got, what, another 6 minutes and 12 seconds until the market closes. So that's two days in a row that the market's up, and that's such great news to everybody. You know, the fact is, we're not really making anything in this country anymore. Have you realized that? I'm sure many of you have, especially those of you that don't have jobs anymore that you used to have that were you were making anything. All we do is sell paper. We shuffle paper on Wall Street. Profits that aren't actually there, profits, ghost profits, scam artists, hedge funds, I don't know what all. All we're doing is shuffling paper so that the folks investing in the market can make lots of money. That's how it works. We don't make anything anymore in this country. Very, very little. Production capacity, I don't know what it's down to as opposed to what it was. And there are those like Neil Cavuto and people like that will tell you that that's a good thing, that we're a more sophisticated country now, and we don't have to be involved in manufacturing and the dirty jobs anymore where you worked up a sweat and got a good day's pay for a hard day's work. Now, it's better to put on your shirt and tie and head down to Wall Street and shuffle paper, buy and sell companies. Instead of having companies that make something, just buy and sell companies and stock in them. That's a better way to make a living, more honorable way. And I'm not making fun of people that work on Wall Street. Maybe I am. But this country has changed so much. It's just changed so very doggone much since, and I know everybody hates to hear it, since I was a kid. I just think we're heading the wrong direction, and it's sad to me that we are losing all of our great production jobs that are going down the drain, especially now that we're in a situation financially that a lot of people can't afford to go to college anymore. It's, you know, we're in for a change. It won't be tomorrow, but it is coming, and it will have a profound effect on the United States and its economy. And nobody alive listening to this program has ever lived in a world where the dollar wasn't dominant, and it's not going to be anymore, and it's a fact of life on this planet Earth. The dollar was king, and it gave our economy a tremendous advantage over everybody else, and that advantage is rapidly ending, and I fear there's not a damn thing we can do about it. And you get a guy like Bernanke out there, he's only got one answer to any question, and that's to print more money. And he comes up with, what, a 1.25% cut in interest rate? And I think that proves that he's a dangerous man, because all he did was bow down to the people in Wall Street and do what they wanted to, not what the working man needed. And he's unfit for that job. It might just destroy the dollar while failing to head off a recession that we're already in, by the way. Who's kidding themselves? And of course, saying he's dangerous assumes that you don't believe in the Fed's role to prop up these equity markets, which are in need of some serious capitulation. But we're not going to get it from as long as Bernanke's running the Fed. Bernanke, he's only going to draw out the misery we're already in. His solution to the crisis we're having is to recreate the situation that got us into this mess in the first place. And his strategy simply transfers the brunt of this downturn, for the time being, from the balance sheets of the investors to the backs of the working middle class. That's how it usually goes, isn't it? And the working class, who you may have observed, aren't doing so well lately. I do worry that a compromised political Fed, and that's what we've got right now, working on behalf of the speculators, as they usually do, to the detriment of the ordinary taxpayer, it's going to be proven to be some sort of a paper tiger. And the one thing that has definitely capitulated in this country is the sense of responsibility that these Republicans are always talking about. And the thing that they're doing once again, and they've done it over and over and over again, they privatize the profits, and then they socialize the risk. And that's the mantra of these times. And I'm certainly not going to accuse Bernanke of not being a man of the times, because he is. He's strictly a political stooge. The wrong man for the job, and I think before it's over, even people on Wall Street will agree with that. Well, I don't want to get into a big, long diatribe on the Fed this afternoon. By the way, I got an email that someone was trying to call and couldn't get in. The lines are working fine as far as we can see. We haven't had the big storms here yet that we're expecting. At least it's raining here outside the Guy James Show studios, but still no big nasty storms that they said we'd have. And they were predicting some real whoppers this afternoon, so that's a good thing. Anyway, when we return, 866-546-5254 is the phone number. We'll look forward to hearing from you then. In the meantime, got news coming up here on the Head On Radio Network on the Guy James Show. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. And by the way, if you tuned in on Billy's show on Saturday night, well, worth listening to, believe me, if you're a music aficionado like myself. We'll be back right after the news.
News Net. Two employees of Pakistan's Atomic Energy Agency have been abducted in the country's northwestern region on the same day as Pakistan's ambassador to Afghanistan, Tariq Azizuddin, was captured. In Africa, Chad's rebels urged the European Union not to send peacekeeping troops, saying the force would not be neutral because it was dominated by France. The rebels said France helped President Idriss Deby stop a rebel attack on the Chadian capital. According to a draft proposal before the European Commission, non-Europeans will need to submit biometric data like fingerprints and facial scans before being allowed to enter Europe. The US now routinely requires European travelers to submit fingerprints. The Associated Press reports after 6 years of waterboarding, sleep deprivation, and brainwashing, the Pentagon has finally found six patsies to take the fall for 9/11, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, so-called mastermind of the attacks. Mohammed's credibility is highly suspect, since he also claimed responsibility for assassination plots against former Presidents Clinton and Carter and the late Pope John Paul, plus the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. A CNN poll found that 74% disbelieve Mohammed's 9/11 confession. AP says by invoking the argument that Mohammed admitted it, debate about the mountain of unanswered questions surrounding the attacks is effectively silenced. Last week, 9/11 families demanded a new investigation. AP says the fact that the 9/11 commission was made up of Bush administration cronies can also be swept under the rug. In Moscow Tuesday, Ukrainian President Viktor Yushchenko met Russian leader Vladimir Putin for last-ditch talks hours before a Moscow-imposed deadline on Kiev to pay its gas debts or face supply cuts. The row between the two former Soviet states has sent jitters through customers in Europe who fear it could lead to a repeat of 2006 when a pricing dispute between Moscow and Kiev disrupted shipments to Europe. Russia's gas export monopoly Gazprom, which provides a quarter of Europe's gas, says it will cut supplies by 25% if Ukraine fails to come up with $1.5 billion. Most Russian gas exports pass across Ukraine, but both countries have assured Europe gas flows will not be interrupted.
Top of the hour news brought to you by INN World Report.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. He's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here on the Horn Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
As time goes by.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Is there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Staying with us through the news. Hey, don't you think the guy doing the news could use maybe a little more... Should I say this? He could use a little more enthusiasm, don't you think? I don't think I've ever heard anybody do the news with a more calm demeanor. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. A huge tsunami struck the mid-Pacific today and killed 4 million people, and we had a tornado hit and killed a, and, you know, he's just very matter-of-fact about everything. Maybe that's the way it should be. I don't know. 866-546-5254. We got lines open right now. Lest I sound like the Hillary Clinton hour here today, I am going to defend myself and what I said, and let me reiterate, I'd be just as pleased to have Barack Obama be the candidate as I was, as I would be with Hillary Clinton. Either way, going to be fine with me. And don't start saying, oh, I'd rather have this person or that person. Doesn't matter who you want. Those are the two people that you've got to choose from. Hate to put it in such harsh terms, but I get a couple of emails, several emails. Well, more than several. Here's somebody who says, I never liked the Clintons because of their ties to the DLC, a group I think has pretty much permanently damaged the Democratic Party. The DLC makes it very clear that they do not like liberals like myself. We must all become moderates and seek bipartisan rule. That's been my problem with the Clintons. But the time Bill Clinton spent with the Bush family, including opening his library, where he pointed out that the Bushes may not agree with him on political issues, but we should all get along because the Bush family were good people, that was it for me. Well, what are you going to do? I agree with some of that. I don't like to see Bill Clinton hanging out with Bush people because I don't think they're good people. But do we then say, fine, I don't like this about Bill Clinton, let's just turn it over to the Republicans again? And, of course, we sent this question over Hillary Clinton family wealth. Well, it's a fact of life these days. Once you're president, you make a lot of money when you're out. A lot of money. Speaking engagements alone, huge money. And let's face it, Bill Clinton's one of the better speakers that we've had around in a long, long, long time. And he's got ties to money. I don't necessarily agree or like it, all of it, but again, what are you going to do? Are you going to vote for John McCain? That's your option. If it's not Obama or Hillary. And also got an email said, I understand you, Guy, but there's one point I've been thinking about to generalize. There's one group you're not addressing, the African-Americans. I don't think you could say they were anti-Clinton or hated them. They were held in high regard by that community, but that is no longer true. Well, I disagree with that. I think they are very definitely still held in high regard with the African-American community. And I think this flap about racism that they took comments of Bill Clinton out of context and tried to make Bill Clinton, of all people, for God's sake, a racist. It was absurd. And I don't think most of the folk in the African-American community hold that against Bill Clinton whatsoever. Just a few politicians in South Carolina tried to make a little hay off of it. I do believe they are still held in very high regard. And if Hillary Clinton, and it is my opinion, if Hillary Clinton gets a nod, she will get the black vote. No question in my mind about that. No question. The note goes on to say, my guess is that in South Carolina, they were given the impression that Bill and Hillary only cared about winning and that as long as African Americans were no longer useful to them, Bill and Hillary didn't care. Well, I don't think that's the case. In other words, since the African American vote was shifting to Obama, Bill and Hillary were dumping them and portraying Obama as the black candidate and insinuating that was because he was black. I think Bill and Hillary, in part because of surrogates, accelerated this. The cocaine remark really angered many. Well, surrogates said that, and you can't control every bit of what the surrogates say. Surrogates have said some awful things on Barack's part about the Clintons. And the note goes on to say, I'm not saying it is fair or right, but you should recognize it. Well, okay. And Frank Rich goes on to quote Frank Rich, a guy that I think is journalistically as unethical as hell. And the Sunday New York Times actually thinks that the Bill and Hillary will destroy the Democratic Party in order to win. So he blames them, not the Democrats, like you seem to be doing. I don't think he was anti-Bill, and he certainly dislikes Bush. Yes, he does. I don't care for Frank Rich. So there is the impression they put winning above all. Please talk about it and the African-American issue. Well, I just did. Thanks, Stuart. Thanks very much. Always well thought out response to things I have to say. Appreciate it very much. I love getting your email. Well, there's a few of you. I don't know. There's a few. There's a few. Yeah. And there's a few that have wondered why you don't get a response from me anymore. I guess you remember what the old ignore thing button's for, right? 866-546-5254. I say all this because I believe, and I really do, I really believe there have been very few moments in American history as important as this very moment in time that we're in right now. The American Revolution, the Civil War, the First World War, the Great Depression, the Second World War, and the great civil rights movement stand out in our history, I think, as watershed moments. I think you'd have to admit that all those certainly qualify for that. And how we responded to those unique junctures has defined us as a nation. And in each instance, I think we responded with great courage and wisdom and strength. Had our ups and downs through many of them, but we prevailed. And the question now becomes, do we still possess sufficient amounts of those qualities to counter this onslaught of terrible domestic and foreign policy issues that are facing us right now? I hope the American electorate has, or at least will, understand that this conservative agenda that's been advanced by the far right for the past 30 years or so has played itself out. And I think they're beginning to understand that themselves. And I hope those who love this country understand that our prestige among the world community is on the brink, and it very well might tip over the edge with any sort of continuation of current foreign policy of preemptive war and this gunboat diplomacy that Bush seems to think is so wonderful. This cowboy mentality has caused our Secretary of State, and once in a while I have to wonder, do we still even have a Secretary of State? But she, wherever she goes now, she's the skunk at the picnic. I don't care where she goes. No one takes Condoleezza Rice seriously. And I hope all of you noticed that we're reviled around the world, and I don't know about you, but that hurts me deeply as an American. And in all my years growing up, and through most of my adulthood, we truly have been a country that was loved and respected by most of the rest of the world. But the comments I've been hearing lately from foreigners have just been appalling. I live in an area where there are many, many, many foreigners right now, this time of year. They come here from all over the world to enjoy the sunshine and the beautiful winter weather we have. Many Canadians, many French, many, many English, many Germans, some Italians. Lots of people from all over Europe come here. But they know that we, and these people are politically astute. They know we have a government that sanctioned torture, that we've sanctioned the murder of civilians. They know we've hired out much of this dirty business of torture to others around the world and then pretended we didn't know the nature of the interrogations. They know about the secret CIA flights carrying prisoners to sites around the world where they're waterboarded or worse. They know we've crossed the line. And they know that we as a nation haven't protested enough to stop this practice. And they've not only lost respect for our government, but they've also lost the respect of the American people. These people read the newspapers. They watch the news. They are politically astute on our political news because it affects them. And they know that the CIA has destroyed tapes of illegal torture. And they know that our Congress hasn't done a damn thing about it, and moreover, they know that the American people have not raised a hue and cry to cause our Congress to do anything about it. Everybody's just kind of, not everybody, but most people have just kind of said, oh well. I've been asked many times lately, why don't you get together and put a stop to these things? And really, I don't have an answer for them. What do I say? What do I say? It's very troubling. It truly is. And domestically, I think we're facing an economic crisis of maybe epic proportions. You know, back when the Depression started, when the Great Crash started, people didn't have debt like they have today. I mean, let's make no pretenses here. That was a horrible time in our history, and it was horrible for the American working man and his family. It could be even worse now. Many economic experts are starting to predict a deep and a wide recession, or worse. Our jobs are disappearing. They have been disappearing for years. The dollar, as I mentioned earlier, is declining. Healthcare benefits, instead of being on the rise, are declining. And we're a progressive nation? We've got pension funds drying up. We've got unemployment rising fast. And I don't have to tell you that working Americans are having trouble just keeping their heads above water. I know you know some. I certainly do. Food and housing and health insurance and gasoline. The tremendous rise in prices of all these things are vastly outpacing the average person's ability to keep up with them. People's credit cards are maxed out. People have drawn all the equity out of their homes, and now the values of those homes are declining. And I don't know about where you live, but around here they're declining tremendously. And the Republicans, the average Republican you talk to, they're claiming it's all because the working stiffs have gone out and bought too many plasma TVs. And you heard it right here on this show just a couple of weeks ago when I was at that conference in Washington. That's right. That's a popular argument. And it is a very popular argument amongst Republicans. The working class have been living just too darn good. And they need to be put back in their places. The unions need to be busted because they got too much for their members. People don't need the nice houses they have. They don't need nice cars. They don't need two cars. They don't need to send their kids to college. The old pull yourself up by your bootstraps argument. When you don't have any bootstraps, it's tough. And this very day, I heard that absurd statement from someone who inherited quite a bit of money a few years back and parlayed it into a pretty nice nest egg. Talking about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, Republican. I know another guy who spews that nonsense about the plasma TVs who got a big insurance settlement when his wife died a few years ago. He lives very well on the money he got from her death, and he rails against the working man and the woman. He hasn't lifted a finger in 10 years. Hardcore Republican. I don't envy the next president of the United States. Let's face it, the next president's going to be facing a minefield of domestic problems. And that's why this election is so important. These are problems that need to be addressed by a real leader. A real leader. And I happen to think we got a couple of great leaders running for the presidency right now. I do believe that. unlike that cowardly man who dropped out of the race last week by the name of... Romney. I think his statement that he, when he got out, was the most awful, awful, cowardly statement that I've heard a man say in political life here in this country. That he wanted to protect his country from the terrorist. In other words, if you elect a Democrat, the terrorists are going to come and get you. Hasn't that been the mantra of the Republicans for a good long time right now? Yeah. The war is still in the news. It's still there. I took the time to read this new RAND Corporation report that came out, which says the U.S. military is seriously deficient in meeting the threat of Islamist insurgency. That was a Pentagon Commission study. Seriously deficient in meeting the threat of Islamist insurgencies. The RAND Corporation report characterizes U.S. military intervention and occupation in the Muslim world as, at best, inadequate, at worst, counterproductive, and on the whole, infeasible. The Pentagon asked the nonprofit research organization to review strategies to thwart insurgents. Don't know many outfits that are more respected than the RAND Corporation. It went on to say that the United States should instead focus its priorities on improving civil governance and building local security forces, according to the report, referring to those steps as capabilities that have been lacking in Iraq and Afghanistan. Another quote from it says, "Violent extremism in the Muslim world is the gravest national security threat the United States faces," said David Gompert, the report's leading author and senior fellow at RAND. "And because this threat is likely to persist and could grow, it is important to understand the United States is currently not capable of adequately addressing the challenge." Not capable. The Pentagon did not respond to calls Monday from various news organizations seeking comment on that. The report's entitled "War by Other Means: Building Complete and Balanced Capabilities." It focused on the increase of about 30,000 U.S. troops in Iraq over the past years, the surge, which supporters have credited for a decrease in insurgent attacks. But it went on to say it would be a profound mistake to conclude from the troop increase that all the United States need is more military force to defeat Islamist insurgencies. One need only contemplate the precarious condition of Pakistan to realize the limitations of U.S. military power and the peril of relying upon it. In other words, you better get your asses busy with some diplomacy, pal. You better get the State Department cranked back up again and have them be an effective medium for working with other people in the world. We cannot live by our military alone. We cannot protect this country with the military alone. It cannot be done. We need the State Department. We need diplomacy. And it can't be the kind of diplomacy looking to having people looking down the barrel of a gun. The report went on to say that massive military interventions against insurgencies usually fail. Looking at some 90 conflicts since World War II, the report concludes that establishing representative, competent, and honest local government is the way to go. And how far have we gotten in that respect in Iraq? Almost nowhere. Along with building effective and legitimate local governments, the report says the United States must do a better job of organizing, training, and equipping local security forces and gathering and sharing information. Other observations from the report include American military forces can't keep up with training local militaries to match the growth of Muslim insurgent groups, and that must improve. Police should be trained by professional police trainers. American military prowess should focus on border and coastal surveillance, technical intelligence collection, air mobility, large-scale logistics, and special operations against high-value targets. Pro-America theme should be dropped in favor of strengthening local government and emphasizing the failure of jihadists to meet people's needs. This was a sobering report from the RAND Corporation. And it pretty much points to the fact that we do not belong in Iraq right now, that we have screwed that up from the very beginning. We have lost our way. And while we've lost our way, we've lost almost 4,000 of our precious military personnel. And I'll say it, in a lost cause. They vilified Harry Reid for saying that the war was lost. It was lost the day we walked in there. I don't care what you think of me saying that. It was lost the very day that we decided to go in there. Without adequate diplomacy first, without trying to work it out. There are many, many things we could have done without going in there the way we did. No better now than it was. 866-546-5254. We'll be back.
The following is brought to you by G4's Duty Free TV, a new nightly block of totally foreign shows.
The 2008 presidential race heats up. A new survey finds that again this year, the number one issue among voters is bullshit. And joining us now to discuss the survey is the director of political polling at the Shuttleworth Research Center, Kip O'Leary. Mr. O'Leary, now we all know that bullshit is the deciding factor in most elections, and this poll says that this election will be no different.
That's right. When it comes to electing the leader of the free world, voters look to issues like a candidate's relationship with their ex-wife. Did they ever smoke? Where do they vacation? What's their exercise regimen? These are the kind of core bullshit issues that people really care about.
Now, in the past, whether the candidates are photogenic has been of key importance to voters who care about bullshit. Is that still the case today?
Oh, yeah, yes. And also, what a candidate wears at public appearances is very crucial to the bullshit-conscious voter.
You mean like where a candidate, for instance, wears a hard hat at a factory and talks about the local union, or let's say we see someone wearing blue jeans in a rural area?
Yes, that's the kind of local crowd-pandering bullshit that people are very passionate about.
Now, according to your research, what will be the top bullshit issues for 2008?
There's so many out there, it's really too early to call. But thanks to the internet, there's literally thousands of websites full of bullshit on virtually every candidate. So voters can log on to discuss that bullshit with other people who share an interest in the same kinds of bullshit.
I agree with you on that. I've even noticed that there's an incredible amount of bullshit being discussed on our news blog as well. Mr. O'Leary, how can we in the news media do a better job of focusing on bullshit and really hounding candidates on these petty issues?
The fact is, you've been doing a great job as it is. If it wasn't for the media, there'd be a lot less bullshit in these elections.
Well, thanks so much. Before we go, do you care to make a prediction for November 2008? Who's the top bullshitter so far in this election?
Difficult to say. No one party has a monopoly on bullshit.
I've always been a big fan of Hillary. She's so full of bullshit.
I think not just talking bullshit, but actually living the bullshit. Mm-hmm. That's the earmark of a true candidate.
Right. And
shook it up. I never loved nobody fully.
sounds I hear in my mind. All of these voices I hear in my mind. All of these words I hear in my mind. All of this music, and it breaks my heart. When it breaks my heart.
Regina Spektor. Love that song. Did you ever see the video of that? I'm not a video guy. It's probably one of a half dozen videos I've seen in 5 years. But it's just absolutely delightful. I love that girl's her demeanor and her voice. It's cute. Cute. That's what it is. Not beautiful. It's cute. Oh, yes. Welcome to the show. 866-546-5254. Why am I so adamant in backing either one of the candidates that the Democrats nominate this year? Here's the reason why. Speaking to reporters in Richmond, Virginia last night, Senator John McCain, Republican from Arizona, attacked anyone who points out that he is fine with keeping U.S. troops in Iraq for 100 or more years. He said anybody who worries about how long we're in Iraq does not understand the military and does not understand war, said McCain. He then added that it's really almost insulting to one's intelligence to question how long we're in Iraq, because he believes the current strategy is succeeding. Well, what do you say to something like that? That's enough for me right there. That's enough for me to not even know who else is running and say that I would vote for them. He's fine with keeping U.S. troops in Iraq for 100 or more years. And anyone who worries about how long we're in Iraq does not understand the military and does not understand war. Mr. McCain, I honor your service to this country. And I know you went through hell when you were a prisoner in Vietnam. And I respect that more than you could know. But there have been other people in the military. One, Dwight Eisenhower, who understood the military very well. And when Ike left office and mentioned about not getting in too deep with the military-industrial complex, he knew what the hell he was talking about. And I think that's been proven over and over and over again over the years. I think a man like Dwight Eisenhower did understand the military. And I think he did understand war. And I think he knew enough to avoid it at all cost. Someone that really understands war does want to avoid it at all costs. And so, Mr. McCain, I'm not sure you do. I'm not sure you do. I think that's a terrible thing to say. Absolutely terrible. Getting back to what we were saying about splitting the party, it seems like we've done most of the show about that today. I got a note a while ago, said, Guy, there is and has been an effort to split the Democratic Party. And I certainly agree. This time it's even greater than before and more evident. I've gone on a few websites, and one has split the discussion of candidates to a separate forum. Well, I think he's probably talking about Democratic Underground there. He didn't say so, but I'll say so. They have split the discussion of candidates to a separate forum because it's so divisive. In all my years in politics, I'll have to, this is not quoting the letter, but in all my years in politics, I have not seen a more divisive primary than we have right now. And I hope people will take a look at what's going on here. To go on to quoting this note, now even if you attempt to have a discussion about Hillary and Obama without taking sides, but to stick to the issues, there's an instant shot ringing out if I even say anything good about Hillary, and the same goes for the Obama side. It's absolutely right. I hate this side thing, and now it's gotten out of control, and I can't see how it can be rectified. As a side note, just between you and me, you know more about radio than I ever will. I'm not sure about that, William. I do have to be honest when I express this. I know what a shill Clear Channel is, and I have to question why we have some liberal, and in parentheses progressive, Mother Jones host as well as AAR host specifically, and I won't name him, he does in the letter, X and Y, bashing the hell out of Hillary. X, mainly with months of constant sound of a mocked Hillary laugh and endless touting of Obama. Obama is her clear choice, but this splits the party, and she takes Obama calls and hold off Hillary calls and claims she gets heat for this. And Y, the other host, does this to a lesser extent, but it is there nonetheless. There are a few others doing much the same. The same thing, some not quite so openly. I have to wonder how much control Clear Channel has over AAR and Mother Jones. There must be some due to advertisement. Perhaps I'm full of... Well, I don't think you necessarily are, William. Thank you for the note. Thank you for listening to the program. I hope we can contain this. I understand people's passions during a primary. I certainly do. Been there. Been there many times and had great passion for a candidate. But never to the point where I looked across and said at the other Democratic candidate and thought him as evil or unfit or anything of the sort. Not done that. And I would not do that because I do believe in the tenets of the Democratic Party, and I would do nothing to destroy the party. And sometimes... people get carried away, and I wonder over on Democratic Underground, and there'll probably be a post up about me saying this. I don't care. I think it has gotten out of control. Not so long ago, I read a thread over there where someone posted a picture of Hillary Clinton in a Nazi uniform. I think it's totally inappropriate. Thought it should have been taken down, and I said so. You can cite free speech all you want to, but when you have a site called Democratic Underground, I would at least, I think you'd at least say in there that you are partial to the Democrats. If you want that sort of thing out, why, let them do it over on Free Republic, the Freepers, but I think it has no place in any decent discussion of politics on either side. And I mentioned it and got chastised for it, excoriated publicly on that site for saying that, but that's all right. I don't care. They know that, and I know that. Speaking of conservative talk radio, I saw an article in Advertising Age, and I was led to it by somebody else. And I just quote an article here. It says, talk radio's job is not to get people elected. It's to have listeners and to sell advertising, said Michael Harrison, publisher of Talkers Magazine, adding that any discussion of the impact is good for business. Well, that's okay if you're selling a bunch of advertising. We're not here, and so we're not looking for business when we talk about one candidate or the other. And Michael goes on to say that the numbers for the top talkers have held steady over the last 3 years, with the Pills Limbaugh pulling an average of 13.5 million listeners a week. That's a bunch of people. And on his national radio show, Mr. Drug Junkie Limbaugh himself said that McCain's nomination would destroy the Republican Party. And Laura Ingraham said, there is no way in hell I could pull the lever for John McCain. And as you all know, they weren't alone. National radio talk show host and blogger Hugh Hewitt was also very vocal in opposition to Mr. McCain, who ended up winning 9 states last Tuesday. And Ann Coulter said she'd throw her support behind Hillary Clinton if the two squared off in the general election. I haven't heard anything from Hillary yet whether or not she'd accept that support from Ann the Man Coulter. And the results had some questioning the influence and credibility of political talk radio and TV shows. And I do question the credibility of many political talk radio and TV shows. Rich Masters, a partner in Corvus Communications, said pundits such as Mr. Limbaugh did have an effect on the voting because many believed Mr. McCain was going to walk away with a clean sweep. The problem is that Mitt Romney, who most of the talking heads were supporting, didn't reap the benefits of their efforts. Mike Huckabee did. But Mr. Huckabee had come under fire from Mr. Limbaugh, too, and after Super Tuesday, he suggested that Mr. Huckabee needs to get out. He was the beneficiary of right-wing vitriol, Mr. Master said. The residual effect was split up, and that tells us a lot about who listens to talk radio. And that split could indicate that Southern evangelicals are a stronger voting bloc within the party than plain old conservatives. And there's no doubt that Huckabee has gained by any kind of a split and was helped out by what went on this past week. All I know is, either way, a guy like Limbaugh is going to come out ahead, isn't he? If he doesn't get his way, if he doesn't get the candidate he wants, he'll moan and bitch and complain and have something to talk about. And if Hillary Clinton or Obama does get elected, especially Hillary, he'll go nuts for the next 4 years. He'll have to take some kind of pill for, and I know he knows his pills really well, but he'll have to take something for foaming at the mouth, because he most certainly will start doing so, I'm sure. Interesting item I saw today. Seems Tony Snow gave a speech the other day, and I just wanted to mention something about it. When announcing the Iraq surge last January, that is a precursor to what I wanted to say, When announcing the surge last January, Junior Bush emphasized that he and his advisors led a, and what he called a comprehensive review of past mistakes in Iraq, concluding that Iraq needed 30,000 more U.S. troops. And here's his quote, Bush. He said, "My national security team, military commanders, and diplomats conducted a comprehensive review, and one message came through loud and clear. Failure in Iraq would be a disaster for the United States. Our military," this is Bush talking, "our military commanders reviewed the new Iraqi plan to ensure that it had addressed these mistakes. They reported that it does. They also report that this plan can work." Well, it turns out, once again, that what Bush said was just a fat lie. We should be used to that by now. Because several of those advisors he mentioned opposed the surge. General George Casey said more is not necessarily better. And again in January, Casey said the surge could be counterproductive. And Bush fired Casey, saying that he'd become fixated on withdrawal and not victory. And the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as well as conservative members of Congress, also recognized the futility of increasing troop levels. So here's the part that I found very interesting. Yesterday, in a speech in California, a former White House press secretary, Tony Snow, revealed the extent to which Bush ignored his advisors when deciding whether to implement the Iraqi surge in January 2007. He praised Bush for increasing U.S. troop levels in Iraq despite widespread unpopularity for the war at home and abroad. He said 80% of Bush's advisors opposed last year's military surge in the nation, which still faces an uncertain future. Snow said, "Everybody was telling him, you're crazy, don't do this." Snow said, "You get the chills. He's really unafraid to take the hits if he thinks he's doing the right thing," end quote. Oh, is that scary or not? His advisors, his generals, was saying, "You're crazy, don't do this." And Tony Snow said, "You get chills. He's really unafraid to take the hits if he thinks he's doing the right thing." Oh, my God. Here we have a man that appears publicly to be unbalanced in one Junior Bush, making decisions like this against the recommendations of his military commanders, 80% of them. Wow. And there's still people talking about it. It looks now like they're going to halt taking the troops out. We had Secretary of Defense for Middle Eastern Affairs, Mark Kimmett, saying the surge is unlikely to succeed. He said, "If I had to put a number on it, maybe it's 3 in 10, maybe it's 50-50 if we play our cards right." And the surge is going so well, as we keep hearing from the Bush administration, it's going so well that Secretary Gates says he favors a suspension of troop withdrawals. It's not unexpected, but Defense Secretary Robert Gates said yesterday that he advocated suspending the moderate U.S. troop withdrawals from Iraq this summer, withdrawals, because the security situation in Baghdad remains, in his words, fragile. Does this sound like the surge is a huge success to you when the Secretary of Defense says he can't withdraw the troops anymore than what they already had planned on because the situation in Baghdad was fragile? Does that sound like a tremendous victory to you? Does that sound like the surge is just going great? And Gates gave his opinion after meeting in the Capitol with General David Petraeus, whom some of the Republicans call the greatest military hero of all time. The current White House plan is still active, that is to send home about 30,000 U.S. soldiers by July. That's the same number that was sent to Iraq during last year during the troop surge. However, after Gates met with Petraeus, he told reporters, quote, I think that the notion of a brief period of consolidation and evaluation probably does make sense, end quote. The ultimate decision, and this is the scary part, the ultimate decision rests with Junior Bush, who has been prone to listen to the advice of his ground commanders, particularly Petraeus, since the level of violence in Iraq has dropped off dramatically under his command. And I think we all know by now, we've heard all the explanations of why the level of violence has dropped off. I'm fascinated by that. Gates previously said he'd like to see about 100,000 U.S. forces in Iraq by year's end. But if he suspends the withdrawal, it's going to keep the level down to around 135,000. So much for Bush's big talk last year about drawing down the troops. It was a lie. I think we all knew it was a lie at the time. We had a note here that I wanted to read to you today, and I've misplaced it. I'll have to. We got this budget issue. Now, I was going to take time today to talk about some of the economic news here in the country. really nutty idea on Bush's budget that he sent out last week. Starts off by cutting back on what the government spends on education and the environment and the health research. And of course, he didn't want to forget to trim back federal aid for firefighters and first responders or federal help for seniors facing huge spikes in home heating bills. And let's cut all this federal spending by $15 billion, and he's bragging about it. And let's take this $15 billion and give every dollar to taxpayers who make over $1 million a year. And if that's not crazy enough, let's take that $15 billion and triple it, and then only give it to millionaires. That's right. Those are the facts on what he's really planning on doing in this budget. And a friend of mine said, that's something, it sounds like a comedy sketch right out of Saturday Night Live. But the sad part is it's true. That's what he really wants to do. He wants to keep those giveaways going to the millionaires for the next 10 years, with each year's giveaway larger than years before. Just crazy. That is what Bush proposed in his budget last week. He said it's a good budget. Actually, it's insane. I don't know how much you've looked it over, but this new Bush budget to keep tax cuts flowing to the wealthy people in America just rips into federal programs that average Americans support and need, by the way. The wealthy people don't need any more help. But they certainly get plenty of it in Bush's new budget, as you might have expected. In the 2009 federal fiscal year, taxpayers who make over $1 million will save a whopping $51 billion, thanks to the Bush tax cuts originally enacted in 2001 and 2003. Those over $1 million income household, notes the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities in their new analysis, makes up just 0.3% of the U.S. population. And in 2009, under current tax law, those people will see more in Bush tax cut savings, $12 billion more, than the entire bottom 60% of the U.S. income distribution, those households making $50,000 a year or less. And Bush tax cuts for the financially fortunate will fade out completely after 2010, unless Congress consciously chooses to extend them, and the way things are going, I don't doubt that they will. He's really working hard to try and get this budget of his done to preserve his legacy. What legacy, you might say? But the nation's most affluent 1%, households currently making over $450,000 a year, would realize $1.1 trillion in tax savings over the next decade if the Bush tax cuts remain in effect. Over $180 billion more in tax savings than the savings that would go to America's entire bottom 80% combined. Let me repeat that. The nation's most affluent 1%, households currently making over $450,000 a year, would realize $1.1 trillion in tax savings over the next decade if Bush gets his way. And that's over $180 billion more in tax savings than the savings that would go to America's entire bottom 80% combined. And this $1.1 trillion would come on top of the near $500 billion the Bush tax cuts have already given the rich over the last 7 years. When you start looking at the numbers in this budget of his and the tax cuts for the wealthy, you'll be appalled. I guarantee you will. Take the time to look. It's not that hard. It's not that hard to look over the budget. There's some very good budget analyses on the internet. I'll try and get a couple of those for you tomorrow so you can look it over in layman's terms. God knows that's the way I have to look at it, in layman's terms, not being an economist. Well, it's been great having you with us here today on the Guy James Show. I hope we didn't turn anybody off by our discussion about the division in the Democratic Party right now over the primary. If we did, well, that's so be it. But that's the way I feel, and if that's how I feel, that's what I'm going to say. I regret the rancor and the division and divisiveness that's taking place within the party right now, and I hope we can find a way to calm it down, keep it to a decent level. I expect a fight. There should be a fight, even a little bit of a bare-knuckles fight, but not to the extent that it's going now between, not necessarily the candidates, but between their supporters on both sides. I don't like to see it get out of control. I don't know what to attribute it to. I know people are passionate. I am as well. But there comes a time when you have to turn it down the heat a little bit, and I think now is a good time to do that. And the division has taken a place on a lot of the left-wing websites. Need to just calm down, take a deep breath, everybody, and realize that once the primary's over, we got to get together again, and we got to defeat the Republicans. That's what it's all about this year. So, thanks for listening. Awfully glad to have you with us here today on the Guy James Show. I do want to remind you that we are a proud member of the Head On Radio Network. And I want to thank Billy Shears for being music.